This is Campus Journal program number 976 for Monday, January 24, 1994. Four, three, two, one. Hi, this is Monday's entry in the Campus Journal, and you know, it's my guess that the Olympic athletes who are going to compete in the 1994 Winter Games in Lillehammer, Norway, my guess is they didn't sit around last summer drinking lemonade and downing mass quantities of Twinkies. What do you think? Nor did they sit in classrooms or take extended vacations this last year. Well, many of the top U.S. bobsledders, skaters, and skiers spent the summer at a facility in Lake Placid, New York, training and practicing for their events. Max Cobb, who's the program director for the U.S. Biathlon Association, a sport that combines cross-country skiing and shooting, has this philosophy. He said that if you don't do it in June, July, and August, then you won't do it in January either. So there they were, in the heat of the summer, working out, honing their skills, in order to first of all qualify for the Olympics, and then to participate in the grueling competition of the 1994 Games. And, you know, the Apostle Paul was thinking about the Christian life when he used an analogy from the Greek games of his era and referred to the strict training that's necessary to win the crown, which would be equivalent to a gold medal today. Christ's well done was the medal that Paul wanted around his neck when he stood before the Lord. And so as a result of that, Paul was not a couch potato Christian. Paul's whole life revolved around training hard and serving hard. He knew that he needed to be intense and focused in how he thought and spoke and related to people. And so just as an athlete must take his or her training seriously, so we who are followers of Christ must continually train ourselves through Bible study and interaction with other Christians, dependence on the Spirit, and self-discipline. That's Monday's entry in the Campus Journal. If you'd like a free copy of our monthly CJ booklet, just call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Hedinga, and I'll see you tomorrow. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal, program number 977 for Tuesday, January 25, 1994. Four, three, two, one. Hi, this is Tuesday's entry in the Campus Journal. And you know, clues to the identity of Jesus Christ are really scattered throughout the Bible. And I think one of the more significant clues to who he is the clue of silence. Now, in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories called Silver Blaze, that story hinges on a clue of silence. In this story, a prized, extremely valuable racehorse was stolen in the night. And the thief was successful largely because the well-trained watchdog guarding the horse's stall did not bark. And the significance of the dog's silence became clear then later in the story when Holmes identified the thief as a friend of the family. You see, the dog didn't consider him to be an intruder, and so he remained silent during the break-in. Holmes used that clue to solve the mystery. Well, the prophet Isaiah in the Bible's Old Testament said that silence was going to be a clue to the identity of the coming Messiah when he wrote 700 years beforehand, "As a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth." Now, this vital piece of information remained pretty much obscure until the trial of Jesus Christ. And it was then that he was dragged before the Sanhedrin, falsely accused, but he remained silent and gave no answer. So the clue of silence fits. And when you add that to more than 300 other clues in the Old Testament, well, the mystery of Jesus' identity is solved. He is exactly who he claimed to be, the Messiah of Israel, who came to be the Savior of the world. And since he is all he claimed to be, don't you think he's worthy of our trust and our praise? Well, that is Tuesday's entry in the Campus Journal. Thanks for listening today. And if you or a student-age person you know would like a free copy of our monthly CJ devotional guide, call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Hedinga, and I'll see you tomorrow. This is Campus Journal, program number 978 for Wednesday, January 26, 1994. Four, three, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Wednesday's entry in the Campus Journal, and Terry Dirks had been to a prayer summit, an extended time when he and some others met together for prayer and Bible reading and some singing. Now, during these sessions, he gained a renewed sense of the greatness and holiness of God. Maybe you've felt that after a great closing night of church camp, or maybe after you went to a concert. Well, anyway, Dirks went home excited with the results of these prayer sessions. Now, when he walked in the door, his teenage daughter was watching what Dirks had always thought to be just a normal, innocent situation comedy on TV. However, after 5 minutes, he quietly said, "You know, I can't watch this." He got up and left the room. What he experienced while in prayer and fellowship with God was a sharp contrast to the actor's misuse of God's name and the lack of modesty being displayed by the female characters on the show. And so his daughter followed to find out, you know, what was going on with Dad. And without being holier than thou, he simply said they didn't feel right about the program. And to his relief, she agreed with him and went back and turned the program off. You see, it's so easy for us to let ourselves be drawn into society's way of accepting things. And step by step, we end up being desensitized to sin. But when we really get in touch with God, we become aware of a pure set of values that exposes the ugliness of sin. So are you willing to spend some time in God's presence through prayer and Bible reading so that you will be able to better understand His holiness? You know, it's the best way to get a handle on what's okay to do and what's not okay to do. Well, that's Wednesday's entry in the Campus Journal. If you'd like a free copy of our monthly printed CJ booklet, call 1-800-653-7221. We'll send it to you free of charge. I'm Brian Heading. Thanks for listening today. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal program number 979 for Thursday, January 27, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Thursday's entry in the Campus Journal. And if you ever played in the school band, then you probably argued with friends about which instrument was the most difficult to play, didn't you? Well, when a reporter asked the conductor of a great symphony orchestra that same question, which instrument is the most difficult to play, he replied, second violin. And he explained this way. He said, "I can find plenty of first violinists, but to get someone to play second violin and to do it with enthusiasm, that's a problem. You see, if we have no second fiddle, we have no harmony. Because, let's face it, it is easy to feel unimportant when our place in life seems pretty small and insignificant. Seems like we're always standing in the shadow of the one in the starting lineup on the basketball team, or the one playing the lead in the school play. And as part of the supporting cast, our lines seem to be incidental to the main themes of life. Flipping hamburgers, doing routine work at the mall seems pretty far removed from the really big events where the action is. Now, God doesn't intend that we be content to remain nobodies. He wants us to be ambitious and industrious, to set high goals for ourselves and strive for them. But still, He calls many of us, in fact, most of us, to fill positions in life that are away from the spotlight. But you know, in doing that, He also offers us the potential for true greatness. And that lies in doing each task as a humble service to our relatives, friends, employers, to God. So I think second violins teach us an important principle of Christian living. That is that being great doesn't depend on what you have, but what you do in the situations that God puts you in. Well, that's Thursday's entry in the Campus Journal. And if you found that encouraging and you'd like a free copy of our monthly CJ booklet, call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Heading. Thanks for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal program number 980 for Friday, January 28, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Friday's entry in the Campus Journal, and do you mind if I ask, when was the last time you cried? Can you remember? Was it when you left home for college, maybe? Or when you received your first tuition bill? Maybe while reading the last pages of a romantic novel, or viewing a news clip of children in Bosnia or Somalia. Well, I heard a news report recently about a woman who had not cried for 18 years. But the reason for her dry eyes was a physical one, not an emotional one. Doctors said that she was the victim of a rare condition called Sjogren's syndrome. For some unknown reason, her antibodies attacked and destroyed her tear glands, and she couldn't cry. But you know, that makes me think of a spiritual problem that some believers in Jesus Christ have. Now, they're people who could cry and should cry, but they don't. They seem to have no understanding of what Jesus meant when he said, "Blessed are those who mourn." Now, maybe it's because they see tears as a sign of weakness. I don't know. But if that were the case, well, then why did Jesus cry? And why did James tell us to mourn and weep over our sins? I realize that we're all different in the way we express our emotions. But literal tears are really not the issue here. It's the attitude of our heart. The real question is, how deeply do we sense the implications of our sin? I'm not talking about phoniness here. I'm talking about really feeling as bad as God does about evil. And so when it comes to sin, are we really sorry for it, willing to turn from it? Or do we have the kind of dry eyes that reveal a hardened heart on the inside? Something to think about in today's entry in the Campus Journal. And would you like a free copy of our monthly CJ booklet? Well, then call toll-free 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Henninger. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a good weekend. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal, program number 981 for Monday, January 31st, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Monday's entry in the Campus Journal, and I'll tell you what, it had to be the hardest hit that Richard Ash had ever felt on a football field. In fact, the lineman for the Arizona Rattlers of the Arena Football League was literally bowled over by it. But this was not a fair play by the big beast named Harvey. No, it was a play where a foul definitely should have been called, because, you see, Harvey is a 1,500-pound bison. Now, the hit occurred during a Rattlers home game against the Detroit Drive. The Arizona team had arranged to have Harvey prance onto the artificial turf after each touchdown scored by the home team. Not a good idea. Now, we're talking way too much bison for a 50-yard football field. You see, in the third quarter, after a TD, old Harvey came rumbling out onto the field, and the next thing Ash knew was that he was flat on his back. Now, fortunately, he wasn't hurt. It sounded like a good idea at the time, but it was not a good promotion. You know, sometimes I think we can be a little like the marketing department that hired Harvey. We rush through life as they rushed into a flawed promotion without making sure that we're doing the right thing. So how can we make solid decisions? Well, it all starts with a solid foundation. We need to build on the rock, Jesus Christ. And the only way to do that is to know His words and put them into practice. Only by reading and following our Lord's teaching can we make sure that our lives won't resemble a bull in a china shop, or worse yet, a buffalo on an arena football field. Well, that's Monday's entry in the Campus Journal. And if you'd like a free copy of our monthly CJ booklet for yourself or a student-age person you know, then call toll-free 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Heading, and I'll see you tomorrow. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal, program number 982 for Tuesday, February 1st, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Tuesday's entry in the Campus Journal, and you know, actors have always intrigued me. I am impressed with men and women who can take on another personality as they enact the drama. I'm not sure that I could ever stop being just plain old Brian. I don't know if I could ever shake my Brian-ness and become another person. You see, actors are successful when they can really get into the character and stay that way, shedding the real person they are and taking on the new personality in the script. In effect, they become two people, the real and the pretend. But you know, what's good for actors can be bad for Christians. Some believers in Jesus are kind of like actors, the real person and then the Christian. The real person, they think, can cheat on a test or get involved with unmarried sex or be dishonoring to parents or treat friends like dirt. And then the Christian person can show up at church on Sunday or put on a front for adults or fill out applications to Christian colleges. But you know, I think I know why we do this. We do it because we fail to see that we're not made up of two separate entities, the body and the spirit. Instead, our body and our spirit make up one single unit. We can't separate the two and think that we can do things wrong with our body without affecting our spirit. I think that's why Romans 12:1 tells us to present our bodies as a living sacrifice to God. You see, it's with our body that we show what's in our spirit. And when we give ourselves completely to God, then we can stop putting on an act and we can be real followers of Jesus Christ. And that's Tuesday's entry in the Campus Journal. Thanks for listening today. For a free copy of our monthly Campus Journal devotional guide, call 1-800-653-7221. Campus Journal is furnished by Radio Bible Class of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Campus Journal program number 983 for Wednesday, February 2nd, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Wednesday's entry in the Campus Journal, and I guess it was one of those parent-teen things. You know, the daughter expressing her independence, while the parents were looking for her to express a little more respect. Well, maybe a lot more respect. You see, since turning 17, the changes in Shelley's behavior had begun to accelerate. She honored curfews only when it was convenient. She held filibusters, not conversations on the phone. Her tone became more and more snappy, especially with her mom. Her grades were going down. In church, well, it had become one big irrelevant yawn to her. And so Bill and Judy decided to sit down and talk things out with their daughter, Shelley. But that turned out to be a disaster, ending with Shelley accusing her parents of not loving her. "If you loved me, you wouldn't try to change me," she said. "You would accept me just as I am." Well, those angry words hung heavily in the air for a long time. Her dad didn't know what to say. He did love her, with all his heart. But, well, the next morning, amid the quietness and dimness of the early hours, Bill called his daughter into the living room, and he said gently to her, "Shelley, I do love you, and I love you just the way you are. But, you know, some of the choices you're making are preventing you from becoming the best person you could be. I'm just trying to point that out to you, but that doesn't mean I don't love you, because I do love you." You know, the same is true with God and His children. He loves us. But Hebrews 12:6 says that the Lord disciplines those He loves. And so when we make poor choices and He must correct us, that doesn't mean He doesn't love us. See, in doing that, He's really saying, "I do love you." And that's Wednesday's entry in the Campus Journal. If you'd like a free copy of our monthly Campus Journal booklet, call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Hedinga. Thanks for listening today, and I'll see you tomorrow. This is Campus Journal program number 984 for Thursday, February 3rd, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Thursday's entry in the Campus Journal, and do you sometimes feel out of place, you know, uncomfortably different from those around you? Well, I guess as someone who's chosen to follow Christ, you know that you are humming a different tune than most of the people you go to school with or the people you work with. And because of the pressure that that generates, I think it's really important for you to recognize how our culture comes into conflict with your mission as Christ's disciple. So how can a Christian live for Christ in a pleasure-seeking, stressful, combative world without being shaped by that world? Let me suggest some ways that were mentioned by Bob Freiling in an article in InterVarsity's Student Leadership magazine. He suggested that we First, be an involved presence in our world. Build relationships. Be active. Also, he said, be a faithful prayer. Because as you pray, you'll see opportunities to be salt and light in your world. Third, be a verbal witness. Let people know that Jesus is the only way to God. Then fourth, do acts of righteousness, because people listen to those who show that they care about them. You see, as Christ's representatives, we have a responsibility we can't pass off to someone else. That's why the words of Jesus in John 17, in the Bible's New Testament, are both challenging and comforting to us. We're challenged by the immensity of what he's called us to do. But we're also comforted by the fact that Jesus prayed for his followers, and he asked the Father to unify us and to use us to let the world know that he loves us. So we know our mission. Our mission is to represent Christ to our culture. And so, Lord, please give us the courage and the wisdom we need to carry it out. Well, that's Thursday's entry in the Campus Journal. And remember that if you'd like a free copy of our monthly printed Campus Journal booklet, just call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Henning. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you tomorrow. This is Campus Journal program number 985 for Friday, February 4, 1994. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is Friday's entry in the Campus Journal. And, you know, when your parents were in school, the big issues were the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, communism, drugs, and women's liberation. Now, other than drug abuse, most of those issues have faded, at least somewhat. And now you have some different ones to face, like AIDS, worldwide political upheaval, global economic stress, terrorism, and violence. And according to Arthur E. Levine of the Harvard Graduate School of Education, many of your classmates are responding by developing what he calls a Titanic ethic. Right now, a lot of students share a sense that the ship, whether it's the U.S. or the world, is going to sink. And so forced to ride on a doomed vessel, students have decided to go first class and seek to make the voyage as luxurious as possible as long as this ship is afloat. So how do we as followers of Christ respond to that with our own doomsday ethic, especially when Christian leaders are saying that things are worse than ever, that God's judgment is about to fall? Well, first I'd like to say that we are not to live by the eat, drink, and be merry philosophy that wasn't valid in Jesus' day and it's still not valid today. The consequences of living that way are really pretty devastating. And also, I'd like to remind you that we really don't know for sure that the end is near, do we? Now, remember, Jesus himself said it's going to come unexpectedly, like a thief in the night? Now, Christians of every generation have been convinced that they were living in the worst of times, that Christ was about to return. But I think what we need to remember is that whether the world lasts for one more day, which is possible, another 5,000 years, which is also possible, real joy and peace and purpose are in a heart that's obedient to Christ. Well, that's Friday's entry in the Campus Journal. If you'd like a free copy of our monthly CJ booklet, call 1-800-653-7221. I'm Brian Hedding, and I'll see you on Monday.